is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
In the days before Mickey Steins walked into Judge Kevin Mullen's chambers and shot him 9 times, the sheriff was making phone calls to family members who had been dead for years. That detail comes from court documents filed in this case. Witnesses told Kentucky State Police that Steins, the elected sheriff of Lector County, a man who'd worked in that courthouse for over 2 decades, was calling deceased relatives to check in on them, like you do when things are totally fine, right? He was also calling living ones, too, constantly, obsessively. On September 19th, 24, inside the judge's private office, Steins tried to reach his teenage daughter on his phone. There was no answer, then asked Mullins for his phone and tried again, and still no answer. Moments later, according to surveillance footage that captured the entire thing, Steins stood up, drew his weapon, and then opened fire. If we're going to examine this case through a mental health lens, not as an excuse for murder, but as an attempt to understand what was happening inside one man's head, we have to start with what the evidence actually shows. And what it shows is a man who was visibly, documentably unraveling in the week before he ended it for someone. The question isn't just why he did it. The question is what he was experiencing, what he believed was true, and why nobody stopped him. 3 days before the shooting, Steins sat for a deposition in a federal civil rights lawsuit. The case wasn't about him directly. It was about one of his former deputies, Ben Fields, who had already pled guilty to SA-ing a woman under his supervision. The victim, Sabrina Atkins, had been on home incarceration. She couldn't afford to pay for her ankle monitor. According to her lawsuit, Fields told her they could work something out. What followed, she alleged, was 6 months of coerced encounters. Some of them happened inside Judge Kevin Mullen's chambers as well, allegedly. Steins was named in the suit for failing to train and supervise Fields. So he had to answer questions under oath about what he knew when he knew it. And according to evidence in that room, he was a hot mess. What happened in that deposition mentally that became the cause that led to the effect that we saw? Or is that not part of this? Is there something else happening? Let's get into that. And while we do, give me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack. The links are in the description. Love for you to join us with your own voice. And if you're listening on the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, leave us a quick review. Greatly appreciate that. And be sure to subscribe. The plaintiff's attorney said Steins seemed agitated and odd. He took 10 breaks during the questioning. He struggled to answer basic questions. At one point, according to the transcript, he told the room, "I don't recall. I'm having an episode. Sorry." His own attorney disclosed during the deposition that Stein had something called California encephalitis, a rare neurological disease caused by insect bites, that he had some issues when under stress. Just what you want for the sheriff, right? Whether that was a legitimate medical history or a foundation of a legal defense being constructed in real time is something the courts will eventually sort out. But the behavior in that room wasn't in dispute. Something was wrong with the sheriff, and everyone could see it. The day after the deposition, Steins was supposed to return a reporter's call about a fatal accident in the county. He didn't respond for hours, which was, I guess, unusual. He normally got back to press pretty quickly. When he finally did, he told the Mountain Eagle newspaper that he'd instructed everyone in his office not to say anything to anyone until he returned. He also mentioned, almost in passing, that he'd lost 40 pounds in the past 2 weeks and didn't know why. 40 pounds in 2 weeks. That's not stress. That's a body in crisis. Over the next several days, the people around Steins watched him deteriorate. According to court filings from his defense team, filings that include testimony from sheriff's office staff, local attorneys, and law enforcement, witnesses described a man consumed by paranoia. He told a staffer named Christine Balling that a local attorney, Daniel Dotson, had demanded he give him money and then kill himself, or else they were going to murder his wife and daughter. This is the what's going through his mind. He didn't say who they were. He insisted on going home to check on his family. He made Balling help put a bulletproof vest on his wife. He had someone call to check on his daughter. According to the defense, all of this was captured on Ring camera footage from Stein's home. One sheriff's office employee told Kentucky State Police Office, "I think his anxiety was completely off the charts. I do feel like he was in a psychosis." Attorney Daniel Dotson, who knew both Steins and Mullins, was alarmed enough that he warned the judge directly. According to court documents, Dotson told Mullins that Mickey was losing it and couldn't take this kind of pressure. He was so concerned about Stein's mental state that he contacted the Kentucky Bar Association to figure out what action he could take. The local police chief, according to Dotson's testimony, put it more bluntly, "That son of a bitch has lost his mind." And here's where the story becomes something more than a tragedy. It becomes a failure. The day before the shooting, Stein's friends brought him to his family doctor. They were worried about his stress and his inability to sleep, and according to medical records cited in court filings, the doctor noted that Steins was very subdued, but Steins denied experiencing any depression, anxiety, psychosis, or suicidal or homicidal thoughts. The doctor diagnosed him with an acute stress reaction and sent him on his way. This is a prime example of where the system is completely broken. Because you're taking the word of the sick person as fact. Never mind the mountains of people outside in the waiting room that can give you documented history that there's something seriously wrong here. If that person says, "I'm A-okay," okay, on your way. Not gravely disabled. This could have been prevented had the levers existed for it to work. And then all in our minds, we can go, well, there's 1,000 ways I would have prevented this or could have. Legally, there aren't. No one could just go lock him up. Nobody could go put him in a mental health hole. He wasn't there yet, but the signs were certainly pointing us there. 24 hours after all that, Kevin Mullins was dead. Now, this were simply a case where a man was snapping under pressure. That would be one thing. Tragic, but not unusual. People break. What makes this case different, what makes it worth examining from a psychological standpoint, is what Steins may have been carrying when he walked into that deposition. Because the lawsuit wasn't just about his failure to supervise a deputy. It was pulling at threads connected to something much darker, at least according to allegations that have emerged since the shooting. Deputy Ben Fields didn't just assault women. According to Sabrina Atkins, he recorded some of what happened. In audio recordings obtained from the Fields criminal investigation and released by News Nation, Atkins told police that Fields had videotapes of some stuff in the judge's chambers just with girls. Sexual and stuff, unquote. Said those videos showed Ben and just some higher-ups engaging in contact with women. When the investigator asked her to clarify who the higher-ups were, she was explicit. And this is a claim that was made by someone publicly. "I seen Judge Mullins having S with a girl," she said. Again, unverified claims. Atkins attorney Ned Phil Storff told reporters, it's like they were running a brothel out of that courtroom. Since then, other women have come forward with similar allegations. A woman identified as Adams told News Nation she had personal experience. I've had ass with him in the chamber, she said. I was part of it. I was one of them. A former deputy jailer at the Lector County Jail said she'd heard the stories, described them as nasty and sickening, and claimed it was something everybody in the county knows. And again, I need to be clear here. These are allegations. Judge Mullins was never criminally charged with any misconduct. He denied any knowledge of Field's crimes. The civil lawsuit didn't name him as a defendant, and he is not alive to respond to these accusations. Whether any of this is true remains unproven. But these allegations were circulating in Lector County, and the deposition Steins had to sit for was forcing questions into the open about what had been happening in that courthouse. Now consider what Steins may have been facing, or believed he was facing. According to his defense attorney, Jeremy Bartley, Steins felt there had been pressure placed on him not to say too much during the deposition and not to talk about things that happened within the courthouse, particularly in the judge's chambers. Bartley claimed there was threats made to him to sort of keep him in line, to keep him from saying more than these folks wanted him to say. These are assertions from the defense, not established facts. But if Steins believed them to be true, if he believed he knew damning information about Mullins and others, and if he believed he was being pressured to stay silent, if he believed his family would be harmed if he didn't comply, what does that do to a mind that's already fracturing under stress? Whether any threat was real or entirely a product of paranoid delusion, the psychological weight would have been unbearable either way. Steins' defense team has claimed he genuinely believed his wife and daughter were in imminent danger when he walked into that office. That's why he kept calling him. That's why he asked for the judge's phone. That's why, when he couldn't reach him, something broke. None of this excuses what happened next. 9 bullets, 7 of them fired while Mullins was already on the ground trying to shield himself behind his desk. The surveillance video captured everything. There's no ambiguity about the act itself. But if we're trying to understand what was happening inside Mickey Steins' head, not to absolve him, but to make sense of how a man who worked alongside someone for decades could suddenly kill him, then we have to account for the evidence of psychological collapse. The weight loss, the sleeplessness, the paranoid claims, the calls to dead relatives, the visible deterioration that alarmed everyone who saw him. The intervention that consisted of a single doctor's visit and a diagnosis of stress. After the shooting, Steins surrendered without incident. Body camera footage shows him trembling, pleading with officers not to kill him, saying, I leave this building, I won't take another breath. 4 days later, a social worker at the Leslie County Jail, where he'd been transferred because of his connections to Lector County staff, evaluated him and found he was still in an active state of psychosis. He was unaware of his surroundings. He didn't appear to understand the criminal charges against him. He had episodes of combativeness, which required pepper spray. He was placed on an antipsychotic medication. The defense has now formally admitted that Steins shot Mullins, but they claim he lacked the capacity to intend to do it, that he was exhibiting paranoid and psychotic conduct, and that he had no control over his actions. They're pursuing an insanity defense. They're also claiming extreme emotional disturbance. Whether any of that succeeds is up to the courts. But here's what stays with me about this whole case, and what I think is worth sitting with for more than a moment. Everyone saw it coming. The staff saw it, the attorney saw it, the police saw it. A friend warned the victim directly that the man who would kill him was losing it. Police were alarmed enough to bring him to a doctor, and the system's response was to diagnose him with acute stress and send him home to finish whatever was happening inside his head. If Mickey Steins was experiencing genuine psychosis, if the paranoid delusions about threats to his family, the calls to dead relatives, the physical deterioration were symptoms of the mind detaching from reality, then this case isn't just about one man's crime. It's about what happens when mental health crises collide with institutional dysfunction, legal pressure, in small town systems where everyone knows everyone and everyone looks the other way. Maybe Steins believed he knew something that made powerful people nervous. Maybe he was caught between loyalty and exposure, silence and survival, and his mind couldn't hold the weight of it. Or maybe he was simply sick, and the sickness found a target. We may never know exactly what was real and what was delusional. But we know what was visible, and we know what people saw. We know what they said, and we know the day after they tried to get him help, a judge was dead. The courts will decide whether Mickey Steins was legally responsible for what he did. The rest of us are left with a harder question. When everyone can see someone falling apart, whose job is it to catch them before they take someone else down with them? In Lecter County, apparently it was nobody's job. And now two families are destroyed, a courthouse is a crime scene, and the allegations that have emerged in the aftermath are forcing an entire community to confront what they've been hiding in plain sight for years. Your thoughts in the comments section. I'd love to get your feedback. Weigh in. HiddenKillersPod.com. Go there. That takes you to our Substack. The link's in the description. You can also get all of that and interact with us on our YouTube channel. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. And be sure to press subscribe on the podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, whatever it may be. Hit subscribe over there. Take us with you on the go so you can listen when you're in the car, at work, at the gym, wherever it may be. We appreciate that. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U.
Did you say someone got shot?
November 2006, a college football star on his way to NFL dreams, gunned down in broad daylight.
His bone crying, and he said, "Coach, they killed him."
No weapon, missing witnesses, conflicting accounts, and for years, no arrest.
She insinuated that the Miami PD had done nothing, and it became a little bit more accusatory.
The case goes cold, rumors spread, and the truth gets buried. Until now.
His world could come crashing down. According to him, it was over.
The ending, something no one saw coming, because this story isn't over yet. From ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast, this is Murder at the U. Binge the full season right now, wherever you get your podcasts.